Welcome to the Skinwalker Debrief. I'm your host, TJ Allard, and I'm one of the executive producers of the new hit TV series on history called The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. I'm joined each week by Jason McClellan and Maureen Ellsbury, and together we'll dissect each episode to give you more insight into the show. Jason has been exploring all the strange for more than a decade. He's appeared on Nat Geo, Sci-Fi, History, and he's the author of Only Weirdos See UFOs, an introduction to the public's misperception of unidentified aerial phenomenon and extraterrestrial life. Maureen is a journalist, researcher, and podcaster specializing in the anomalous. She started the docuseries Uncovering Aliens on Animal Planet and has served as the ambassador for Science Channel's Are We Alone initiative. And tonight, our special guest is none other than the superintendent of Skinwalker Ranch, Thomas Winterton. Thomas, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
This is awesome. And so should we call you Thomas or Tom? What do you prefer?
I tell people if I get Thomas, Tommy, or Tom, I feel pretty good about myself. It's the four-letter ones that I try to avoid. So anything that you're comfortable with.
Awesome. That is great. So I think just give you the rundown of the show. I mean, you've kind of listened and checked it out. What we'll do, just so people who are listening and watching follow along, we'll go through each of the blocks of the television show. And so what blocks are in the TV world, so it's the space between the commercials, so the actual content of the show. And there's an A block through F block in The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. So we'll just hit a point or two of each block, talk with Thomas about them. We'll talk amongst ourselves, and we'll get some questions from you guys, because this week we have a lot of them. So first off, what we normally do is we'll recap the last episode. And now that we have you here, Thomas, to speak about some of the stuff, it'll be great to kind of hear some elaboration on what happened in the previous episode, which was Looking Down. And I am one of the first things was, where is the transmitter? That was the number one thing. So what happened in that last episode, Looking Down? Why don't you kind of tell us what you remember from that episode?
Well, you know, that whole experiment with the weather balloon was, I love watching these scientists, because it seems like every experiment we do, they just become more and more baffled. For every answer we get, we have 10 more questions. And with this weather balloon, we had more than one transmitter on it, two different types, and you'll have to forgive me, I don't know, you know, all the details about the two. But the durable one, the one that Matt has used repeatedly, he said that never fails him, it quit transponding right there at that magic little mark that we had guesstimated through our triangulation. When they got to that point, it just stopped transmitting. Now, the other one, we did get another beep or two off of it, but we searched and searched and searched, and we never found that balloon. You know, the scientists, as you go up, these signals, the way that Travis was explaining it to us, and I love, that's one of the things I love about this show is, you know, my background is business, and then obviously I grew up in the ranching community. I'm familiar with those things. But this science part, it's been a blast learning from Travis and Eric and Dr. Sagala, and having them explain to us why these things are significant. Sometimes we see things happening on, you know, as things are happening, they're baffled, and the rest of us are like, what's the significance of this? And so, you know, when it comes to these signals that we're seeing, the reason that they're saying they're off Earth is that the measurements are indicating they're getting stronger as they go up. And a lot of the signals that we are seeing, they hug the ground, and they get weaker as you go up. And so all of the tests that we've done so far seem to indicate that the higher we go, the stronger these signals become, which is opposite of what they would expect to see. Unless you're obviously, you know, going up towards a cell tower. But sure. The other baffling thing is that we're not in the middle of a city. The levels that we're seeing, we're in the middle of nowhere where we can't even really pick up a cell phone signal. And so to measure the type of signals that we're getting is baffling to them as well, because it's in the middle of nowhere.
So Jason, Maureen, so what they were experiencing as the signals were going, you know, as they were getting higher, have you guys had any other encounters or cases that you remember that there's been measurements or anything like that from your years of experience?
That would require so much deep diving into my memory.
Yeah, too much. Yeah. I don't know if there was something that is common, uncommon. You know, it's just one of those, like, could it be?
Yeah, it's from my perspective, it's pretty uncommon. And certainly a reason for that is because this type of testing doesn't really occur that often. So, you know, the ranch is positioned pretty uniquely to be able to have scientists on site to do these types of experiments. It's not something that you see in a lot of paranormal research. So it's really cool to see.
Awesome. And then, so let's go right into the current episode, High Strangeness. And, you know, first off, we come right into it and you guys are already digging under the house. And you get a little background into that house and the creaks and the knocking. And then you find bones and bone fragments, ashes in a room. So Thomas, what's going through everyone's mind there? I mean, like, what were the reports coming from that house? Did you find anything? Did you get any evidence or any information about what you found?
Yeah, so what drew our attention there in the first place is not only did Tom and Candace, who'd been there living there just a couple months at the time that we did this, but the previous caretakers that were in there and the Shermans all reported hearing strange sounds. And, you know, I've seen some of the comments like, oh, you know, water heaters pop, right? You know, furnaces. I want to be crystal clear that when we say that we're hearing strange sounds on the show, strange for us is sounds that we have not been able to identify their origin, right? We've already ruled out the furnace. We've ruled out the water heater. We've gone through the checklist of things that it could be very first. And then after we've checked all those boxes and we still can't identify what it is, then it becomes a strange sound. And so we're hearing these strange sounds, some strange vibrations that are coming over the last couple of years. We've had some really interesting vibrations that we've picked up on the infrasonic and then also with audio. And our first thought there was Uinta Basin is got a lot of oil, a lot of energy extraction here. So the first thought line of thought is that we must be picking up the vibrations from drilling. You know, we do a lot of horizontal drilling here, so they'll go out for a mile, 2 miles laterally. And so we thought that that's what we were picking up. The problem is that as we start going deeper into this, we're able to rule out that drilling is the origin of this as we start, you know, lining it up with the drilling schedules and what's going on with around us. And so we have these strange sounds coming from the basement. And as we go down there to investigate, I was drawn to the cement wall here. And what's interesting is that the floor joists, I'm a general contractor. So anytime you have a cement wall, usually it's a load-bearing wall and you've got the joist resting on top of it as a bearing point. And what I noticed about this is that the floor joists are about, you know, 6-8 inches above the cement. They don't make contact. So then I'm thinking it's a retaining wall, but the joists go so that this room really does sit almost in the middle of the house. And so it's got house all the way around it on the front, the back, and the two sides. So as I was looking up above between the joists and the cement, I'm thinking that's really peculiar that there'd be a cement. Like, there's obviously some type of room right here because you can see across the top of it that it's cement ceiling. Mm-hmm. And so then the thought from the scientist comes, well, it's possible that if this is a fully encased cement room, it could act like a resonance chamber, which, you know, sounds traveling long distances through the ground can be amplified in this room, and maybe that's the source of the sound that the residents are hearing. And so I went ahead and took a drill and punched a little hole so that we could see just exactly what we were dealing with. And, you know, it was fun that the viewers actually got to see us. That was the first time that we had been able to put a camera or anything in there. So they were witnessing with us. That was the first time that we really were getting to see what was inside. And we have this concrete room. And then obviously you see that pile of debris. Now, the interesting thing about this debris is the hole was not there long enough for that debris to be something that had fallen in from the outside. It was far enough into the tank. It wasn't directly below the hole. I mean, I really had to stretch my arm in there far to get the camera right above it. And then the rest of the tank was basically spotless. I mean, I don't even recall seeing any spider webs or anything. I mean, this thing was pretty sealed off. And then there's this little pile of debris. So that was odd. You know, I've heard people commenting or read comments like, oh, it could be a cistern. Well, it could be. The problem with that, so there's a cistern over by Homestead 2.
Tell us what a cistern is, so people understand, like, a lot of people won't know what a cistern is.
Yeah, so it's just it's basically a water tank. The layman terms is this is a water tank. There is one pipe that comes in on the back of this. It doesn't go anywhere, and so it's possible it was a cistern, but if that's the case, I don't know how they plan on getting water in or out. There's not like a pipe at the bottom to draw water out of, and there's just no access to this thing. So it's baffling, and these bones and this debris that we saw, you could say, well, maybe a mouse got in there and died, but what you'd find then would be an intact skeleton, right? Like, the bones were pretty mashed up and looked like they'd been crushed up, actually. So how something could just crawl in there and die and us find it the way that it was, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, if it was an animal, the skeleton everything would have decomposed and you would just have a skeleton. And just wanted to let people know, and then I want to get Jason Maureen's thoughts on this. What Thomas was saying, they know every sound or they've identified the sound. So Eric, when I was out there, Eric had showed me a number of times. He basically has a signature, an audio signature of every sound that could possibly be happening. From the vibrations of the poles, he knows what that audio wave looks like. When a car's driving on, you know, one of the 4x4s, whatever, are driving on the ranch, he knows what that audio wave looks like. So it's almost like he has a book, like, oh yeah, that is a, oh, that's, you know, Tom's car. So he knows everything that's going on there. So that's what he's saying. That if they don't know what it is, then that's where they explore. But you guys, what do you think about this? Give me some thoughts. What are your thoughts on the tank, the room?
I shared a little bit last week about how it seemed like possibly that was something that was more normally occurring back in the time the house was built. And I'm not saying that from direct, you know, knowledge in terms of contractor side of things. And honestly, like the pile. Now, the more I think about it, the more I thought, well, it reminds me of, and I don't know how this would get in here, or this is going to sound crazy, but it reminded me of like a disintegrated owl pellet that would have a ton of bones in it. But I don't know where the pipe leads. You said it leads nowhere.
What?
So
what is it? A disintegrated owl pellet? I don't know what an owl pellet is. What is
so
that?
So it's basically the digestion of an owl. It'll have a ton of little tiny bones in it and other hair and fur that, you know, we used to have to dissect them in high school. And when they fall apart, it looks kind of like that the mess that was found in there. But again, what would an owl pellet be doing in a concrete box? So I have no idea what it is, but I was intrigued. And I will say, I saw today a lot of people were commenting about what looked like a coin in there. And I'm assuming that was put in there by you, Thomas, or Travis, or for some reason. So I would, for our audience.
Yeah. So when we first put the camera in there, it was impossible. When we found that pile, it was impossible. We could tell they were bones, but that camera was so interesting that it was hard to get a perspective on what size we were looking at. So I actually reached in there and dropped a quarter so that it could give us reference as to what she's seeing. So it was I did drop it in there, and it was just purely there so that we could get an idea of what size we were looking at.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's mysterious and interesting, and why it's there, and whether it was just somebody doing a really bad job of sealing up a cistern and forgetting to put the actual functioning way to get the water out, or it's something much more mysterious is very curious. And Jason, what about you?
Well, I think if it was a mouse, I mean, obviously it spontaneously combusted. I mean, that explains it completely.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bizarre. You're talking about, you know, old construction and you know, old houses. It's not uncommon to have these weird random rooms that through different construction phases over the years, you know, rooms get closed off. But this one is just so weird. So I like it because, I mean, it keeps you going throughout the, well, last episode and this episode. I mean, it's very mysterious. So I liked it. I don't know how to explain it. But something I did like in that part of the story was this week we got to meet the residents there a little more, right? TJ, you teased that last week that we hadn't really been introduced to them yet, but this week we got to know more about them. So that was cool.
Get their backstory. And and Thomas, I did see some comments. People were saying that it could have been a fallout shelter. Is that, do you know anything about that? Like, can you rule that out?
Well, the only thing that I would rule that out with is, again, the only hole into this place was like an inch and a half diameter pipe. So that there was no access, even getting inside, like there just was no way to access this. So, which is interesting in the fact that if you look at the construction of it, the formed construction, Where did I know from experience, you got to pull those out.
Right. Okay. I'm sure we're going to circle back to that in the series. I mean, we're not just going to leave that hanging out there. Eventually we'll get, we'll come back to that topic. So let's keep moving on.
One more comment. I saw several people comment like, why didn't you guys call the police?
there you go.
That they were not human bones, and so therefore we could rule that out.
There you go. So I love that you've been able to squash about 74 conspiracy theories in 30 seconds. So thank you for clearing a lot of that up. So moving on, let's go to the B block of the show, and this is the bait pens and bringing in the cattle. And so then we get a little bit of the backstory of, you know, bringing these cattle. And so why, and what else I'm liking this is, as we're going through this, you know, there's a lot of questions that we're not going to be able to get to because we've gotten so many from the audience. And thank you guys for sending all this stuff in. And please just, you know, if you're listening, keep on sending stuff. We're going to have more Q&As with the cast, and we're going to keep this going. But there's bringing these cattle in. Like, so why aren't there cattle on the ranch normally? Is it a cattle ranch? Is it not a cattle ranch? Can you explain why there aren't cattle, or are there cattle? I mean, I know, but I want Thomas to kind of get into it a little bit more specifically.
Okay. You know, I can't speak to what was done before we came on. I can tell you that neither Brandon nor myself are interested in owning any cows. I grew up around them. I personally hate cows. They're in the world. But that being said, they do serve a useful purpose. And we found there's a couple different reasons behind our logic. First of all, you have to feed them. And by the time you put 40 head of cows on that ranch all summer, they've grubbed it down pretty good, and you don't want to overgraze it because then you're hurting the land. And we don't want to have to buy feed and feed them through the winter. So it's easier for us to find a local rancher that can come in and lease that, bring his cows on. We don't have to be responsible for owning them and take, you know, vaccinating them and branding them and all the things that go with cows. But we get the benefit of making sure that the ranch is cared for, both from an environmental aspect. You know, we live in a very dry climate, and so you get grass that's 3 feet tall, that's dry, and it just takes one spark, and the whole place just goes up. And so the cows help us keep it from becoming a fire hazard. So we bring them on in the spring when the grass is sufficient to be able to support the herd, and then we take them off in the fall. When they've grazed it down. And then the other reason, obviously, we got science in there. There's obviously lots of stories of mutilations that have taken place on the ranch. And so we want to have cows out there. It's part of the narrative, you know, and right. As much as PETA does not want me to say that we're looking for animals to be harmed, for us to get to the bottom of this, it would be nice to catch something in the act where we could be able to look at it scientifically and figure out what's going on.
Which may or may not be happening later on in the season.
So there's that. And then obviously animals seem to have a sixth sense. And, you know, the classic example is this latest episode when the rockets are firing off. What are the animals doing? Not only during that, but before. And so we watch them very closely. Do they stick to one part of the ranch more than they go to another part? When we start picking up RF signals, say over in Homestead 2, where are the cows at? Did they leave an hour before? Are they still there? So we like to watch the cattle very closely and monitor to see if somehow their biosensors are picking up something that can either validate what we're picking up on the science, or if there's, you know, no, you know, if they line up. And the other thing about bringing other people's cattle on too is we keep talking about how the ranch behaves when we bring somebody new on it. And I know that sounds crazy, but scientifically, I mean, we can show that there seems to be a trend that when somebody new or something new comes on the ranch, we see a spike in anomalous events that take place. So in every aspect, that seems like a behavior that, you know, that's what I'm going to call it. So by bringing new cattle, not keeping the same cattle on the ranch all the time, it also gives us the opportunity to, we bring on different herds every summer with the hopes that we can keep things mixed up a little bit.
I have a quick question about the cows. How long, what was the time span here from the time the cows were brought onto the ranch to when you started observing them doing this odd behavior of huddling together and running to the corners together?
That is an excellent question. I don't know if I can actually answer that without getting in trouble with the TJ, guide me here.
Yeah, let's fair enough. I mean, there's some answers that are going to be revealed, so that we'll kind of get those answers will come in time. And Maureen, I know, you know, we've talked about the literature before and the stories before.
Yeah.
From what you've seen on the show, does that kind of correspond with what you know of the cattle's behavior on the ranch?
I don't know about the running around, and I actually, my question was the same as Jason's as well. So I'll back away from that. No, but I do have some theories that I can't get to yet because we're not in the right block. It was a lot of weird behavior where the huddling, you know, even it was mentioned about the story I mentioned a few episodes ago, and then it was mentioned in this one, was, and I think they were actually bulls, prized bulls that were crammed a second later into this tiny little trailer. That made no sense. And they were looking around for these bulls everywhere, like they were just here. And to find them mashed up in the trailer was completely, like, eviscerated, because you cram three large animals into a small trailer, you're going to see some damage. But, yeah, I mean, there was obviously a lot of history of the cattle mutilation as well. But I don't specifically know about the herding behavior and the prancing in the field, which is kind of why I was wondering Jason's question myself. But
you know what? I just thought of a way that I can answer it without giving anything away.
Go for it.
We had this particular herd of cows on the ranch for the entire summer, basically, right? We took them off, I think, early November. So we have a really, really good baseline sample to compare that behavior that we saw on TV to, both, you know, leading up to that, and then also a huge sample afterwards. And I will tell you that for the most part, out of the three herds that we've had on the ranch, that was probably the calmest herd that we've had on there. We didn't have any problems with them all summer. They were very calm, and so the behavior that we witnessed on the episode was very out of the ordinary for that herd.
Okay. Now, the trailer that was there that we see on the show, I know that we mentioned the house and how there was locks on both sides of the doors. And that trailer, is that the same one that was there, do you know, during the booked period?
I'm pretty sure it is. In fact, that the corrals have been built around it. And so it'd be really hard to bring it in after the fact. So I'm pretty positive that that would be the same structure
that they had crammed themselves into.
Yep.
Okay. Awesome. Now, in the next block, this is kind of where we're starting to get to the science of things with the rockets. And in my notes, I'm like, rockets, what the F? So we finally get some rockets, and you know, Travis later, you know, the way he kind of refers to it, and you guys kind of kind of create a new phrase, and I wanted to start a hashtag online called digging up, because I thought that was a really cool idea. because you start poking upward. And previously, it's like, don't dig, but no one ever clarified if you meant dig up or dig down. And now that you're digging up, there's stuff happening. Why don't you tell us about the experiments that were kind of going on at the time? And you know, I know one of the rockets didn't quite make it, just like the balloon didn't quite make it and it was never found.
Right. Yeah. So you could easily say that every experiment that we have done that starts to poke upwards, we have had quite a number of different anomalies take place while that was like with the hot air balloon, the weather balloon. You know, interesting thing about that was the one that we let go and just let float away. When we released that, we actually had a pretty good westerly breeze going. And I commented when we were doing it that I hoped that the balloon could get to altitude before it reached Colorado, because we're really wanting to get readings there on the ranch. And with the breeze was actually pretty brisk. And so, you know, there's like a million things that happen on Skinwalker Ranch that you look and you're like, there's probably nothing to it. But then on the other hand, we released the balloon, and rather than taking that westerly breeze grabbing it and taking it off property, it almost floats to the north, and it goes literally right through the center of where we had triangulated. I mean, it had to have been within 100 feet of the dead center of where we were triangulating. It's little things like that are very fascinating to me as to why it didn't take carry with the breeze and just head to the west. Maybe it got up and there's a north breeze, but
almost like it was pulled that way. Almost like
it was like it was funneled up there. We're watching and it just heads right up for that very point when on the ground. And now I understand like the winds aloft could be doing different things than the winds on the ground. But, you know, the winds on the ground were definitely going to the west, and the balloon took off and went to the north. And so that was interesting. Then you get the rockets, and we fire off the first rocket, and obviously the chute doesn't open. And it's kind of funny. That was Jim Segala's personal spectrum analyzer in there. He was kind of upset. He's like, it mangled it. It's his personal one. So
poor.
But the others were successful, and what they did is they allowed us to get up to a higher altitude and get a reading for, you know, it was a short period of time, but we were able to launch several of them and repeat the experiment and get the same results, which is important. And it also reminds me that the interesting thing about these type of experiments is that one thing we've been able to prove is that they're transient. They're not there all the time. So
right, that's notorious. The ranch is notorious for that. Like the phenomenon is transient, from everything we know of it at this point. So the rockets, how many would you say were launched throughout that time period? Because it, you know, on the show you don't get to see, and I want to make this clear. A lot of people criticize like, oh, well, it doesn't look like the timing matched, or the date, the timestamp was wrong, or there's only one rocket, or there's only, well, this is TV. And so people have to understand, like, for every, the formula is typically 1 minute. Well, nowadays it's even longer. So it used to be 1 minute of content for every 60 minutes filmed. I think that's even pushed longer now. So meaning if you've got a camera running for, and I don't know what the ratio is here, but let's just say it's 4 hours. So every 4 hours, you're getting 1 minute for the show. So you got to understand it's all condensed, and just because the timelines don't necessarily match up in the show doesn't mean that it was faked or staged or anything. It's the editing process. So I just want to make that clear, because I know there's a lot of questions about it.
No, and it's then, a good point. And it's also something too that I've seen some criticisms on the comments of, oh, is that how you guys really handled those, you know, meters with the coffee cans or the laser, you know, you're up there for 30 seconds trying to work on, If that's a great point. If you, matter of fact, the camping scene with that laser, like 1 minute we're setting up the camping gear and they go up on the hill, and the next minute Dragon's sitting there saying, we got to hurry, the sun's coming up. Like when the laser went down, we spent a lot of time trying to get that stupid thing to work. And, you know, we tried the batteries. We tried everything, and it is time consuming. And look.
Hours of time, not minutes, hours.
At the end of the day, you want sexy, right? And so sometimes science doesn't provide the sexiest shots. And there were even times, too, like you'll see timestamps on the cameras, where when we're dealing with RF signals, well, we've got cameras going, we've got we've got our audio equipment going. They produce signals themselves. And so when we're picking up these anomalies, there were times where the scientists would make them turn everything off because we had to differentiate between what we were producing and what we were picking up from whatever it was we were picking up. And they didn't want that interference from the camera equipment and the microphone equipment. So obviously, if you got to take the cameras down for a few minutes so that they can get a bearing on what's going on without the interference from all of this outside, the stuff we're producing, when you bring them up, there's going to be a difference. The shadows are going to be in a different place and so forth. So absolutely, there's a lot of production that goes into that.
Your TV your TV show is screwing up the science, TJ.
Right? Come on, science. Damn it. No, we're sciencing the shit out of stuff. And it, you know, science, observational science takes a long time. And you know, you have to wait and wait and wait, and you might get that 1 second of content. And just, you know, can't stress enough. Nothing is staged. This is what's happening. It just takes a long time to get this stuff. So like you said, shadows might be off. Things might be different than you would think in the timeline, but it is in fact really what had happened. Maureen, I know you wanted to comment on something. Was this the block you wanted to comment on?
Well, you haven't gotten to the UFO yet. So.
Ah, screw it. Let's go. So the next block, we come back and it's a UFO. Oh my, yeah. Finally. Maureen, what did you want to say? Come on, I want Maureen to lead the charge here.
Okay. The UFO. Well, because I find it interesting. And before anybody jumps down my throat saying that I'm being too much of a debunker, because I'm not trying to debunk it. It's unidentified. I don't know what it is, but I do have some like basic Project Blue Book theories that it's interesting that it does behave a bit like ball lightning, and. But, you know, I understand it's a beautiful sunny day. That's not been unknown to happen. So I had a theory that maybe if there was some sort of, I don't know if you've gone into meteorological data for that time period, if there was some sort of electric current going through the sky at that time, that would also kind of maybe possibly relate to gamma hits and then freak out the cows. So that was kind of... thought, but
this is great. We have Thomas to address this too.
Yeah.
No, Thomas, what do you think? What do you think of Maureen's theory? And tell us about the whole experience. What was happening? What was it like?
So we saw it multiple times. And the interesting thing is that I don't think that anyone can say 100% definitively it was this or it was that. So your theory, I think it has to be in play until you can prove otherwise. That being said, I'll just say that when we went back and analyzed the footage closer, we were able to pick up additional ones. And it's hard because we're at episode 4, and
we're getting there.
The rest of them. So I don't know if they're like going to circle back and show additional. I've told some people, let's get 8 out, and then I'll know what I can say and what I can't say.
So let me just say this before we keep going. Let's just say this. So we know what happens. And I think that if we continue to get people to watch the show and we go to season 2, I think we're going to get a lot more answers. So this is watch the show Tuesday nights, 10 o'clock, except for this week. We'll be back on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, so we can get some more answers from Thomas, because I think we're going to get to that. We do circle back to stuff, but it's I think without giving out too much info, Thomas, I mean you kind of vaguely described, yes, there's, it has to be identified before we say it's unidentified, or has to be unidentified until we say it is identified, I should say.
And that's just one theory, because I am not a scientist. It was just one ballpark thing.
I would say, speaking to that, that a week before we saw the week before we caught that, I was actually with another individual, and we were out on the south side. We looked up, there was a contrail across the sky from a jet, and literally saw a craft that looked almost identical. Well, I'm calling it a craft, right? I saw an object that looked identical to what we saw, what we showed on episode 4. That actually darted out from the contrail and was there for maybe 2 seconds, and then darted back in, moved back behind the contrail where you couldn't see. So I don't know what the behavior of what it is you're speaking of, but I do know, like, it came out an inch from the contrail up in the sky, and then it moved back in, and it was really rapid.
Jason, what are your thoughts?
You know, it's incredibly fascinating to see on the screen what it does with its disappearing behavior. It's also fascinating that there were multiple witnesses there who all saw the same thing, right? So these are great things, and many who are scientists. So, you know, you've got really good things here that you don't typically get with the UFO sighting. You also captured it on video, something that you can go back and analyze. Plus, you've got Eric with all of the gadgets going on in the control room and checking flight data and all of these things to rule out other possibilities. So you're really set up here with an unusual situation when it comes to UFO sightings to be able to rule out the possible identities for these things.
Right.
And you're left with more mystery, I mean, when you start peeling back the layers. So I like it. I'm hoping we get to see more with that because we've got a lot of data to work with here.
I have a question for you, sorry, real quick, is do you feel, I know the sun was in everyone's eyes, so it was very hard to see, do you feel like it was more of a, like, solid metallic sort of look, or do you think it was more translucent? Because I know over the course of the years, this is a very frequently reported type of UFO, but also there's been biological UFOs, what that people call them, reported, where they're more like the same shape and they kind of have that look, but they seem like they're more translucent and moving like an entity almost.
Yeah. So my personal opinion, what I saw, I'm not going to speak for the other individuals, but for my interpretation, what I saw, it was more translucent.
Nice. So, I mean, what I really like is the fact that, you know, you have this object you see, or these objects that are, and we see them as well. Well, you see them at least twice on camera, and they're different ones. So going from the D block to the E block, I mean, what I love is you guys just press on with, like, let's shoot more rockets. Let's get more data. Let's just continue what we're doing and not stop and, like, oh my God, we saw this. Let's all go inside and watch. No, you had a job to do. I mean, a lot of people, you're fascinated by this and people would be in awe. I mean, I know, when I'd seen stuff, or if I had seen that there, I'd be like, okay, I'm done with the rockets. Let's go see what this was. But to your guys' credit, like, hey, you kept going and it happened more. I mean, there were more. I mean, yeah, right.
I love same seeing that, you know, having, I mean, and Travis said it, he said, look, stuff's happening now. So now's when we want to get our stuff up there because it's there. So that was really cool to see. And I feel like I have to come to Travis's defense here a little bit because, you know, some people are hating on his UFO phrasing, but, you know, as jarring as that sounds, and I will never use that term, that is the correct pronunciation of UFO.
Is it really? I never knew that.
Yeah, Captain UFO? Edward Ruppelt, who coined the term UFO from the Air Force's Project Blue Book, specified that that's how you pronounce UFO. It's UFO.
That's awesome. I'll leave it to Travis to be the only one who can pronounce it.
Please.
I think that was more of a Southern thing, but.
Wait, what were you saying, Thomas?
I said, please, nobody tell him that. His head will get. We won't be able to live with it next summer.
That's awesome. So the next barrage of rockets and the, you know, they're going off and you're collecting data, and then another one shows up just like again. And Dragon starts to feel ill. Did anyone else feel it? What was going on? And did anyone else's sensors react?
Yeah, so when he indicated that he was feeling a little bit off, like the rest of us, at least I can count for myself, and I know a couple of the others are there, you automatically start looking at your own, like, well, am I doing anything weird? And to my knowledge, he was the only one that was really reacting that way at that point. So, you know, I personally didn't feel anything, which is nice for a change.
Yeah. He seemed like he was probably the most shocked and flabbergasted out of everyone about seeing it. So I think, yeah, that probably could cause a big spike in the heart rate. I'm not sure about the nausea, but I could see, like, he seemed to be the most taken aback.
And none of this kind of the cat's out of the bag. You know, we'll get him back on here to get a little insight, you know, when we can, into his experience. That'd be awesome. So Jason, what do you think of the sensors? I mean, like you said earlier, how unusual it is, because you have all of this tech going. And personally, I don't know, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know of any other sightings that have this kind of corroborating data around it. Like this amount of evidence or data that are collecting, and we as the viewers, or as not the people that are actually there, are getting to see this. Like normally when something like this happens, people claim there's this, that, and the other, but we don't know that's true. Like here we are witnessing it. So, I mean, Jason, I want to know what your thoughts are on this, because it's kind of a unique, well, like you said, it's a unique situation, but is there anything else that even is close to this that you know of?
Well, you're right. I mean, it is an incredibly exciting thing to sort of be an audience member and experience this, to go on the journey with the team there as they're discovering this and acquiring data at the same time. It's highly unusual. There are other cases that do have sort of a wealth of data points to work with. Those are typically like sightings that involve commercial aircraft or military aircraft. And
Puerto Rico UFO.
Yeah. So with these, you get, you know, sometimes you get video from military sources, but you certainly get air traffic control data and the audio dialogue that happens between planes and ground control while they're trying to work out these sightings and they're calculating positioning and altitude and things like that, where they've got multiple data points to work with. But it really doesn't happen that often, certainly not when you've got the video to go along with it, you know, from the ground vantage point. So, I mean, this is really cool. And like I said, I mean, having all these data points, I'm excited to see, you know, what comes of it.
Now, before we move on, because Thomas, I mean, you know, Jason and Maureen have at least a lot more experience than I do in this realm, and I kind of defer to them a lot of times. And I know you as well. Like, you weren't a UFO buff, or you know, it wasn't something that you were actively seeking out. But for the two of you, if I think that this is going to play to a lot of questions that we'll get to later. But if there was another piece of information that you could have acquired during this, what would it be? I want to hear what both of you have to say. Like, what would be that one other piece that could kind of round this out and make you be like, holy shit, this is what I've been wanting to see. Like, what would have been, besides somebody opening a window and being like, hey, what's up, out of the UFO, what other piece
please
of
please don't con- start saying that.
I'm being facetious here. But what would that other piece of info be that you guys would say, hey, you know, out of all our experience, it would be great if we had this, because I know Eric would love to know this kind of info as well. I mean, it's something that these guys will process and potentially, you know, can implement if they think it's necessary or useful.
I mean, I think there's a lot of different things that would be helpful to have, but I'm sure that a lot of this we're just not seeing now. So I don't really want to answer that question without seeing like a full report of the scientific study done personally.
Okay. And I feel like Jason's going to say, yeah, ditto.
Yep, ditto. Exactly. No, I mean, that's the smart move here. I mean, we know that there's so much more going on with this investigation that we haven't seen yet, so it's hard to comment on. But something, like I just mentioned along the same lines, is, you know, there was other air traffic in the sky at the same time. So with some of these sightings that happen that involve commercial air traffic, you know, it's interesting. It would be interesting in this case to have been able to communicate with that plane and see if they were able to visually sight anything perspective.
Yeah, I totally forgot. I wrote down that question to ask. Oh, nice. Because we have the tail numbers of this other jet to see if they saw anything. So thanks, Jason.
Thomas, so going into the next block, this is the part where you guys are all sitting around the F block. You're sitting around and you start discussing the data. You know, you're going over stuff. You're in the command center and speaking to what they were both just saying, you know, Jason and Maureen, what was going through people's minds? What were the reactions that we didn't get to see? And if you want to address anything that we just talked about, like in terms of other data points that we're not aware of, or the air traffic control, like, you know, these criticisms that people have thrown out online, like, hey, it could have been this, it could have been that. Just because you don't have the tail number doesn't mean that it wasn't an aircraft. Not all aircraft have, you know, if it's military, you may not have a tail number on it. So what do you think what can you say about this stuff?
Yeah, so we actually have multiple different sources that we use to identify aircraft, both we have a transponder both on the ranch, and then we subscribe to other services as well that provide that information. And so we always are looking at multiple sources to try to identify. And they're right. Like, matter of fact, we see it quite often where we will see aircraft come across the airspace that they're not transponding. Now,
can you do real quick, tell us about I know that Eric, it's his own transponder, right? The transponder, I mean, we'll get him to talk about it as well, but the transponder that you guys are using, one of them anyway, to ping the tail numbers, he built that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Eric's like the MacGyver of, this guy literally can pull stuff out and make, he is one of the most brilliant human beings I've ever been around, and he is a guy that literally is so well-versed in so many areas that, I go in that lab and watch him put together equipment and sensors and different things. He'll buy a sensor, and then he'll find things he doesn't like about it, and he'll tear it apart and modify it and test it. And he's brilliant that way.
So we'll get to talk to him about it next week. We're going to have, so everyone knows, Eric's going to be on the show next week, and we're going to start taking questions for him, but, you know, we'll let him speak to that stuff. But go on, tell us about, you know, what you were saying about the aircraft. You've seen other aircraft without tail numbers.
Yeah, we have seen other aircraft come across the airspace that are not sending out a transponding signal. That does happen. So you always have to take that into account. So then the next thing that you have to look at, and this is really what starts throwing us off, is, well, is it, if it's an aircraft, then obviously it's going to be moving and behaving like an aircraft, whether it's a helicopter or a plane. And so what was nice about the one sighting that we had is we actually had an aircraft right there next to it to place it against. And so then you're looking at the movement behavior of it, and that's, you know, Travis had a hard time. I originally thought it was a plane. I thought that what we were seeing was maybe the sun glinting off of a jet. I've seen it before, and it does look similar, but the behavior and the movement of it was not, it wasn't, didn't lean to that theory anyway. Right. It was an aircraft.
Okay.
At least not a plane that travels and behaves the way that what we'd expect to see.
Okay, and so now you guys are sitting in the room, and you're obviously having that discussion, and then talking about the, I think it was Travis mentioned, like, how this is like a big deal, like a big effing deal, that you have a relationship between the gamma measurements. Is that, was that correct? I don't want to misspeak about what measurements were.
What made this really spectacular is obviously you've got the eyewitnesses, and they hate for us to ever refer to the guys behind the camera. It's like, I think they call it the fourth curtain, right? We're not supposed to break that fourth curtain.
The fourth one, yeah.
There was way more witnesses than just us standing out there on camera. You had a lot of individuals on the production side of things that witnessed it too. And so there was a lot of eyewitnesses. And then you have the cattle. And I'll tell you, the cattle's behavior before... we were firing rockets off, and they didn't even seem to care. Matter of fact, the one rocket we fired off, it came down right in the middle of the herd at one point, and they didn't even acknowledge that it was there. and so the behavior of the herd was very out of the ordinary. Then you start looking at the data on all of the equipment that we put up there, the gamma and the RF. Everything seemed to be just registering high anomalous peaks during that time period right there. And with the rockets, when we start analyzing it, it did look like it corresponded with the altitude of the rocket, which would indicate that there again, altitude was playing into the intensity that we were measuring some of these things.
And so it was gamma, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
All I think of is the Hulk when I think gamma rays, right? You think gamma, and that was their, you know, the mutation or whatever. So Jason Maureen, what do you know about that? I mean, is that a common thing that the gamma measurement, has that ever been noticed before that either of you are aware of? Is that something that has been measured that you know of? Or
I haven't heard it mentioned in any cases, not that I can think of.
I was kind of thinking like it was going to be like an I don't know, but I always feel like these could be those questions where you're like, you guys know the answers to this. Like, yeah, that was from a blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, I kind of want to make sure that we at least cover that potential to if you guys. So I don't want to skip over something if you know something about this that we're not diving into. And then I know you guys, Travis. It was kind of an awakening for him, he was just like, I can't believe it. You know, he wasn't expecting any of this. Did anyone else on the team have that kind of reaction? Like, I mean, you guys have all had your experiences, but like, what about Dr. Segala? What was his, you didn't really get much of his reaction to it. I see you smile, Thomas. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think everybody in the room was, there were some of us in there that felt validated, and then there were some of us that felt, I know for Travis, this was definitely something new. Same with Dragon, up to this point, Dragon, and I'll let him speak more for himself, but hadn't had any kind of these experiences before. And so trying to process what they just saw. And the good thing about it is, though, and even though I've had experiences at this point, you still keep going back and double checking, did I really see what I thought I saw? And that discussion in that room, we were actually in that room for a long time analyzing, hours. And so, and part of it was simply because we just keep looking at each other saying, did we really see what we thought we saw? And then you look at the data and you just keep shaking your head. So it was a fun room to be in. And Dr. Segal is very, I think he's very measured, and he doesn't get too high or too low. He's a very measured guy, at least the time that we were around him. So that's why I smile when you ask about him, because I think the ranch could be on fire and he would still be very measured and very...
Yes, technically that is on fire and that's burning, and we'll walk steadily over here this way, exit in single file. Yeah, I think that's personality has been kind of established, or at least it's becoming established. What am I missing, you guys? What other points are there that we're not talking about in that scene? That I know Eric was looking at the the flight data recorder, and people criticized that again, saying the time didn't match on that. And again, all I can tell you, it's editing. So if the times don't match, that might be a shot from earlier that people were using, and it's illustrating exactly what is happening. So it's not meant for you to kind of timestamp that. The last shot we got of that may not have been as good, so you're putting that in there, and it's just to give you and imply what it is that they're analyzing. So you have to kind of go with the magic of television at times, but just knowing, again, it's still real. There's nothing that's kind of fabricated, but I'm trying to think of what else we saw in that scene. I know Travis was there. That was where his digging up comment came. That was when that was mentioned. And I just thought, like, wow, that's got to be – that's a T-shirt, man. Yeah. Digging up.
Poke in the sky bear.
Yeah. Poke in the what? The sky bear?
Bear. Yeah.
I've never heard that. I like that. All right. Poke in the sky bear. So, that's awesome. The – Eric, I've been speaking with Eric. I mean, I speak with all you guys. And Eric, I think he'll be able to kind of enlighten us a bit more on what it was. But I saw a question a lot, Thomas, and you might be able to answer it. The camera, was it one of the ranch cameras that we're looking at the footage of, or is it one of the cruise cameras? I didn't have a chance to clarify before we came on. What's that, Eric or Jason?
I mean, I think they say on the show, yeah, when Eric's remember. Talking about it, I think he says that Eric had it mounted somewhere. But should I thought they said on the show?
So I believe we picked it up on both. And if you go back and look, when we're very first watching it, if you see it's kind of shaky a little bit, I believe that was the camera that they were holding, the actual production cameras. And then we obviously go back into the
command center.
The command room, the control room, sorry. And at that point, we're looking at footage that came from the surveillance cameras.
Okay. I mean, that's because you're
pretty awesome to have multiple shots and angles.
Multiple camera, yep.
And in the, I mean, you can see that shot clearly. Somebody pans up with that camera. That's why it looked like it was a handheld. Someone was controlling that. It almost like missed the zoom, but they got it, which was great. That's basically where we left off at the end of the show. And then we start teasing for the next week. And again, so people know we're off for the next week and we come back on the 5th. But you can see from the previews, the super tease going into the, you know, the next episode, we talk about GPR. They talk about the two story structure potentially. You know, what do you guys think, Thomas? Talk to what are we going to see? What are we going to see when we come back? That you can tell us without giving away too much. Like,
yeah, I won't give any spoilers, but I will say, out of all, look, episode 4 was awesome. I mean, we saw a UFO or UFO. We collected some great data. So 4 was a great episode, but I think as far as like the actual substance, 5 is the one I'm the most excited about over the entire, out of the entire season, everything that takes place. I think that some of the stuff that will be revealed in episode 5 is some of the most meaningful and significant data that or indication of what we're picking up at the ranch that we'll release all season. I've been stoked for 5 since we filmed.
Awesome. That's great to hear.
I didn't close 5 then. I just knew what we picked up, and I know that judging from the super tease that we saw, I know for a fact that it's at least going to be addressed in 5, and I'm super stoked.
Well, you just super teased the super tease. I'm excited.
Right?
Now, when great. I saw the ground penetrating radar, I got really excited.
Yeah, those guys came out. Thomas, tell us just real quick without going into too much like with the spoilers, but how long were these? There was another thing I see, you know, a lot of times these guys are just coming out there for a few minutes and they get out there and it looks like, oh yeah, they just did this entire thing in 2 hours. Or the example is with the drone, the guy with the drone. It looks like he was only there for, you know, a couple hours, did his thing, batteries died, and that was it. I mean, but that's an entire day. I mean, that's a long day. You're talking 8-10 hours. So like with the GPR guys, how long would you say they were out there for? I mean, you're talking one day, multiple days. Yeah. And again, that to illustrate, like, you're going to see them for a few minutes on the show, but they were there for days. So when people say, oh, they weren't there very long or whatever, you know, they were. So we do tease, they do pull open that you saw the concrete being lifted. So that, I had an experience with that. I don't even know if Thomas remembers. Like,
cistern.
Yeah, that's there, sister. You go. So, yeah. At Homestead too, I had two instances with that thing hurting me, and then the door falling on me and cutting me in one of the homesteads. So I'm curious to see what data we're going to show, because I think there's something to that, because that's when I had gotten sick right after that for a very long period of time. So I think there's going to be some interesting stuff that's going to come out of that. I can't give, you know.
Speak to that just really quickly, like some of the stuff that you see. I'm hoping that the members of the audience will remember some of the things that have already taken place. I mean, right there in episode 2, we have those guys come out and do a sweep. Safety was a huge concern. I mean, the liability waivers we had to sign were unreal. Safety was a huge concern. And so obviously we're going to take every step we can to ensure safety of the, not only us, but the crews and everybody that's out there. So these guys that came out and swept for radiation and did the RFs sweep, they come out and they sweep these places that we really honed in. 512 acres is a lot. So what we did is we identified the places that we were going to be focused on, and we really did those, dove in and did those thoroughly to make sure it was going to be safe to be there. So when you see the things that are coming up, you know, and some of the events that are taking place, it's important to remember that we got a clean bill of health on this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of mention about radiation in the soils, and I've seen a lot of comments and questions about that kind of stuff. It's important to remember we actually came in and tested it, and we got a clean bill on it. We didn't pick up anything that was abnormal or dangerous when it came to radiation. So If you see things in future, like episode 5, they tease that, just remember, it wasn't there when they tested.
Right. So it goes back to the transient point. So I'm glad you said the questions that come up. So let's just go into the viewer questions. I mean, we have a ton of them. We'll just kind of rapid fire, just rattle them off, Thomas. Obviously, Jason Maureen, chime in at any point, like, elaborate on them, whatever. But I know Thomas,
certainly, I think through the course of our discussion already, I think he's Thomas has already knocked a lot of them out. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And we knew it was going to happen. I mean, there's some we'll be able to kind of go gloss over because you've already answered. So let me just go right into it. I mean, you know, we kind of compile them from the email. People submit them via email in the Facebook group as well. They'll put things in the comments. We'll get some from YouTube in the comment section and on Twitter. So and please keep them coming, especially these next couple of weeks. So since we're off for a week, we're going to try to take a lot of questions science related so that we can maybe have Eric on for two episodes, which would be great because it would give people some real in-depth answers. And if you know Eric, he loves to go into detail on stuff. and he always puts these great analogies to things that kind of make concepts click in your head. I mean, Thomas, you know this, like he just has a great way of speaking to you. So on the science related stuff, we'll be able to, you know, please just keep them coming and we'll get to them. But so Thomas, let's go into the first few from emails here. Okay. So we have right off the bat, has any attempt been made? This is from Jordan via email. Has any attempt been made to contact the phenomenon rather than the passive studying by science observation? So has there been any more attempts to contact?
So starting into the I'm just going to say that Brandon has been very methodical in his approach to this. So I remember sitting in his office for the first time. His instructions to us were all we inherited was a narrative. We didn't get actual data. And so his first instruction was, I want to make as minimal of an impact as possible on this place, and I just want to observe. And we spent like the first 12 or 14 months where we tried to just be very, very light-footed and just observe. And then, and the whole purpose was, is there really something here? Is this just a, you know, a whole bunch of tales? Once we established that, yes, we are observing some unexplainable events, then we started into the methodical, okay, what is it? And so I want to speak to this actually for a second. This is important.
Sure.
You know, Brandon's done very well for himself. He is a great businessman. He's wealthy. And sometimes people get the idea that, well, he's got all this money. Like, why are you guys out there using tin cans? Well, Brandon is, he's not just going to open up the pocketbook and go buy a $100,000 spectrum analyzer right off the bat because we don't even know what we're looking for. Right. So what I remember when we first went and did the, we actually, I think the first thing that we bought was like a cheap $500 Costco surveillance camera because we didn't want to invest $160,000 in a camera if we don't even know that there's something to pick up besides butterflies and cows. So we went, and Eric can speak to this more, but some people are like, oh, you've got this billionaire backing you. Why don't you have all this expensive equipment? He's wealthy because he's smart with his money, and he's been very methodical as he lets the data guide the checkbook. And so as we pick things up, then he's like, okay, we can't be using this little piece of junk anymore. We're obviously picking something up. Let's go big and let's buy something that's good. And so if people see something, and season one, I tell people, you go to the hospital and you go into the emergency room, they don't automatically roll you down for a CAT scan. Nurse comes in, takes your temperature, gets your blood pressure, gets your vitals before they determine what further tests they're going to require. And it's important to remember, we're in season one of this. We're just getting the vitals. And so if it seems like, man, you guys aren't following up, you're not moving on, well, we're taking the temperature, we're getting the blood pressure, and after we've done all of this, then we take a look and we say, okay, where do we want to allocate our resources, our time, our money, our bandwidth to further study? So as people are watching the show and it seems like, man, they're not following up with that sinkhole or with the thing under the house. And it's one of the reasons why I want to be careful about elaborating too much on stuff, right, because we will probably circle back on some of this stuff.
Thank you. That was that's really good.
Sorry, long winded.
Not at all. That's awesome.
These guys get a little sensitive because Eric has been criticized before. Oh, you work for a billionaire and you're getting that equipment right there. And he's like, just because he's a billionaire doesn't mean, like, Eric. I remember Eric when Brandon's like, well, what camera system? Like, Eric is the most detailed guy. He literally will spend an entire week going through everything to and then he submits it, and it's like, well, this camera right here, it's $250,000. It's like, yeah, we're going to start cheaper and work our way up and when we know. So to Eric's credit, he does know what he's talking about. And if you see us using like tin cans to try to get a signal thing, there's a reason for it.
Excellent. No, I'm glad you cleared that up. I mean, kind of laying that out to people, you know, again, I can't stress enough. These are real people. Like the team, these are not actors. These are real people. These are their jobs. This is what they do. So it's not, I just don't know how to get that across any more. And you know, you did touch on something, and I want to say the liability waiver that you had to sign. Like, so in all my years of production, I have never had to sign anything so comprehensive that also covered the unknown and not force majeure, not, you know, act of God. I mean, you're talking about like, yeah, so we're not liable if, you know, you get abducted or something comes down from the sky or, you know, get possessed by some kind of spirit. Yeah, sorry, you're on your own. I don't know if you guys have ever had to do that.
No, I don't think so. But I love that, honestly. I mean, it's a liability if there's some sort of wolf attack that there's been reported on the property and then it happens to you. You're walking into it knowing full aware that something weird's going to happen to you. So that's your own damn fault.
And there's history at that location of just that happening, right? So, I mean, there's already precedent set for, I mean, it makes sense. It's very smart on their part.
No, it is. I mean, again, Brandon is really smart with what he does. Like, he's smart with his money. He knows how to protect himself. But if anyone's listening that deals in insurance that does this, I'd love to know more about that. Please, how do you insure someone for you know, paranormal? I'd love to know that answer.
But to the point that you know, you're just making about having this wealthy individual with a company, you know, Maureen and I had to deal with the frustration of public comments and ridicule like that with the company that we helped start called Open Minds. It was focused on UFOs and extraterrestrials. We had a wealthy individual who was the owner of that company, started that company, and we were the ones making the decisions, putting together items to buy, cameras and equipment and things like that. And we had to be very careful. It was always a, you know, sort of a delicate balance of trying to get equipment that would be good enough to start, you know, any sort of task we were doing before jumping to something grand. You know, we would lay out these detailed proposals and say, look, here's the gear we need to be good enough. And, you know, just because he had money didn't mean he was going to just sign checks. He wanted justification and he wanted to know that it was going to be, you know, worth his money spending it on what seemed like stuff that we were just having fun with.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of, like, we'd do YouTube videos and always they'd send us messages about, I don't understand why you're not paying to send me equipment so I can do this real, I'm seeing real UFOs, and you'll see that all the time. So it's not going to stop. We dealt with it for 8 years straight of these kind of comments and then having the frustration too of sometimes really fancy toys got bought without, you know, that we didn't necessarily know or need, and then we never got to play with them because they just sat around.
Damn it. And the waste.
Brandon is fantastic. Like, I've never seen him say no if it's led by data. Like, Brandon's willing to spend whatever it takes to get to the bottom of this as long as it's justified. So, I mean, he's been great that way. But
yep, very transparent and, you know, taking us along for the ride. So let's continue. So one of the questions from Twitter, this, and again, and I love these questions from younger viewers. So we have a science question from someone writes in, I have a science question from my 15-year-old. Now this is from a 15-year-old. The question is, do you think that the unusual amount of radiation on Skinwalker Ranch is caused by the radioactive decay of large amounts of radioisotopes? If so, what element would you hypothesize the isotopes are of? From a 15-year-old. Thomas.
Who knows? Man, that's awesome.
Right?
I think so. So I'll just answer again and just say, you know, we swept the ranch and we didn't pick up any radiation in that sweep. So if we're just going to say if in the future we happen to pick something like that up in a future episode, obviously we need to investigate that further. But as far as picking up any radiation on the ranch, period, we didn't gather any of that, which surprised me because we did have a lot of downwind fallout when they did the test. So I would have expected to at least see, you know, some, but.
Okay. I mean, you know, there's a lot of time left.
Yeah.
A lot more studying to do. Yeah, stay tuned. So then there's this, and this I find really interesting. This next question also comes from Twitter, from Tara, or Tara. She asks, I'm curious about the behavior of birds on the ranch. Is anything notable or unusual in that geographical area as compared to other regions? Thomas, you know of anything about that?
Yeah, so we've actually had numerous events corresponding with birds. Matter of fact, there's a picture that's been used several times in the episodes. It shows Brandon standing in the trees holding up a trifield meter. Mm-hmm. I believe it was actually that event that we're standing in the, we're at home and the birds are chirping and all of a sudden they go crazy and then the RF spike hits on the meter. And we have observed that now numerous times. I was over at Homestead 2 tending water at one point, and there was probably 200 or 300 crows out there in the trees just squawking and going crazy. And then there again, they increase in volume and they'll go dead silent, and it's all corresponding with what's going on with the trifield meter. So something there with the birds, there again, another biosensor picking up what's going on through the air. But absolutely, we have multiple events where we can directly coordinate, like the birds either stopped chirping or started chirping, corresponding with the readings that we're getting on the trifield, the spikes.
What's a trifield? Can you tell us what a trifield meter is for those listening that don't know?
Yeah, so the trifield meters that we use, they actually have numerous settings, but a lot of times we just click it over to radio frequencies. And so it's just scanning across all of the radio frequencies, and it's just giving us a reading as to whether there's RF radio frequency in the area, and it measures the level of that. And you know, your cell phone puts it off. It's kind of cool if you put it up by your close to your cell phone and you send a text, it'll spike. So anything that's putting off a radio signal, whether it's a cell phone or Wi-Fi, anything will cause that RF or trifield meter, which is measuring RF, pick that up.
Awesome. Anything about the reason I was curious about the birds because of magnetism? I know, aren't birds attracted? Isn't that how they do their migrations? I mean, don't they use magnetism to find things and to navigate? Does anyone know that? No?
Am I on here? Actually, it's the magnetic poles that they base their migration patterns on.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I was curious. Yeah, the magnetism, if there's any, because of the magnetic anomalies that, you know, that have supposedly occurred there, that, you know, we'll get to the bottom of at some point, I'm sure. Now we have the next, it says, and this, Thomas, I think this is going to be something, you know, that you're going to want to address. Because people asked you, and you've shared it online, about being followed home with hitchhikers. So someone from Ken from Twitter asks, Tom, my question is, why do you think something follows people home after they visit? What do you think that is? And that kind of goes into, just keep going, that goes into somebody else asking, you know, about your hitchhiking experience stories, because you haven't really, they've got a few of them. So the question, why do you think something follows people home after they visit, and what do you think it is? And then can you tell us a little bit about your other hitchhiker stories?
Sure. I think out of everything, this is the one that drives me the most crazy. And it's because psychology is one of my favorite it's one of my passions. And you start diving in and you start thinking, you know, you've got your change blindness. You know, you go buy a white Jeep Cherokee and the next day suddenly everybody else bought one too, right? You didn't notice it before you bought one. And so I look back, and this is the part that drives me crazy, is it's like, is it that I didn't have these experiences before I started on the ranch? Or is it simply that I got on the ranch and I started to become more observant to that type of activity? So therefore I pick it up. People that have an experience Is it just that now their reticular activating system is now letting that through and they're now observing it? It was there the whole time, but they didn't see it before. So that's the part that drives me nuts, is that I really go back and forth, and I'm like, is it just I didn't notice it before the ranch, and then I start working on the ranch, and I start noticing it, or did it really uptick? And that being said, there are a few incidents that have happened at my home that I can honestly say it never happened before I became associated with the ranch. Now, I shared that with that video of my car and the windows going down, not to convince anybody, because I can't prove that my key fob was on my nightstand. I can't prove that I didn't go turn the camera off and run out, roll the windows down, and run back in the house. Actually, I can prove that. You know, I actually have cameras on every because of some things that have happened associated with the ranch. And I'll just say that we've had some scary things happen to our family I refuse to talk about in public. I won't. As far as the cameras going down, that is not the first time that one camera. I have quite a few cameras positioned around the exterior of my home. Then I have several cameras inside my house that are pointed directly at the entrances, like the doors, for that purpose. So, well, I actually can prove that I never went out and unrolled the windows, because I had cameras on all the entrances and exits of my home. And I can prove that nobody went in or out of the house during that time period. Now, it is possible, and this is why one of the things I love about sharing it, I didn't know about that feature where I could just hold, like, the car has a built-in feature where if you hold the key fob, the unlock button, for like 3 or 4 seconds, all the windows will roll down. So that's actually not like that
far-fetched or hard to believe.
Far-fetched. Yeah, it could happen, right?
Right.
The only thing is, I only have one key fob, and I won't say, I'm not going to go into it, but I can assure you it was not in my pocket. It was sitting on the nightstand. I know exactly what I was doing during that time frame. I jumped in the shower. Like, I did not have the key fob on me, I can assure you. So something still has to account, but what we're seeing out on the ranch, there's so much that has to do with RF. That's all we're seeing with the key fob, is it's just sending a frequency to the car to tell it to roll down the windows. So the car has that feature, but I did not activate the feature. So where did it come from? And then why did just that one camera on the car, none of the other cameras in my home, not a single one even so much as glitched during that time frame? And so only the camera facing the car goes down for those few minutes. And when it comes back up, the windows are down. That's not the only time that has happened. We had a serious incident happen at our home that resulted in us actually having to call authorities. And coincidentally enough, the very place that took place in my yard, that particular camera was down for a few minutes prior to that event taking place. And those kind of things are ones that scare the hell out of me, frankly. And I won't talk about them, because there's a lot there. When you start dealing with insurance companies and all kinds of stuff, I just don't want to go there, right?
Right.
But I will say that that's not the first time these cameras have gone down, and they correspond with other events that I can prove wasn't any of us. And so you start to look at that and say, well, what's going on here, and why did that happen? I didn't have these things happen before I started working on the ranch. My life was actually pretty I'm a businessman. I was president of Rotary Club. I'm president of a nonprofit humanitarian, international humanitarian. I was just a regular person, and then I start working on the ranch, and I enter this twilight zone where things start happening that I can't explain. And I will share some of them as time goes on. And my point to sharing them is simply a point of, hey, this is what's happening. I'm not here to convince people, because, like I said, there's no way to provide proof for some of this. It's just, it's enough now that I don't know what it is. I do know that, again, I've lost count the number of individuals that come to the ranch. I think I heard you mention before, TJ, that you had things happen after you left.
Yep.
You start to compile the data points, One by itself can be a coincidence, maybe tens of coincidences. You start getting up to 20 and 30 and 40, you start have to start saying there's got to be something to this, because the numbers are just pointing. Well, we're getting a fingerprint of something here.
Right. I mean, I can attest to, you know, being a hitchhiker coming home with me. I mean, back to the East Coast. I actually have video of a couple of instances that I caught. Because I would always get frustrated my entire life. You know, it's always like, I've never seen a UFO. I've never seen anything out of the ordinary or anything like that. And I would get frustrated because, being someone who works in, you know, television, everybody has a high-definition camera in their pocket. And I'm always frustrated as to why aren't there more high-quality videos? And I was always looking up. And then once I went to the ranch and came back, it was like a light switch had been flipped on. And I was seeing things so often that I would walk around with my camera in my hand. And it could be like you were saying, well, maybe it was happening before and I just wasn't paying attention or didn't know what to look for. But I've seen things. I mean, I'm talking on 45th Street in the city, in New York City. Things with multiple witnesses and video. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This stuff doesn't happen to me. So yeah. And a lot of other strange occurrences, I'm sure at some point I'll get to, but there's something, I don't know.
Electronic. I'll just share, you know, they asked for additional and I said, I have many, I do. I'll just say, if I was to group them into, you know, I didn't know my car had this capability, but I find out it could just be a simple RF anomaly. Right. Even the camera, that could be the things that have happened. There could be a logical explanation for every single one of them. But we have had our televisions turn themselves on in the middle of the night and have messages scroll across the screen. We've had our phones taken where we lose control of them and they just start doing all kinds of weird stuff. We've had, like, our electronic devices. Sometimes I feel like we're in Transformers, right? Like, where all the appliances and stuff start acting and behaving like robots. So electronics in my home, my kids will just tell you, we've just learned, like, the abnormal is normal at our house now. And it all started after I started working at the ranch.
I'm with you. I mean, I can, again, the same thing. I've always been a tech nerd. And when I came back from Skinwalker the first time, I mean, I've been there multiple times, but the first time, since that first time, my wife is always like, you know, what are you doing to your computer? What are you doing to things? Why does everything break when you touch it? I'm the guy they ask to fix things or help, you know, program your VCR kind of stuff or fix my computer. And now I don't even want to touch anything because everything I touch, something goes wrong. So I don't know. I mean, Jason, Maureen, please chime in here. What, you know, have you heard of these stories? I mean, I'm sure you've heard these stories before, but is it just Skinwalker or are there other,
you know, you've heard? Well, I think that's a general paranormal thing is, and a lot of people say, you know, be careful what you do and where you go to, because it could follow you home. And I know that's true for a lot of people. And that's especially in, I think, more tending towards the ghost realm of paranormal experiences usually is happens a lot. And I know people it's happened to. So, and again, in too, with the UFOs, it's like once you see it, once it rains, it pours, you know? And I think that goes for Jason and myself as well, too. Once we started getting more involved in this field, strange occurrences start happening and you start noticing things, you start seeing things more often. And it's surprising. And I know certain people then you look at that just seem to always have a million sightings and it's like, what are they doing? They're more aware and paying attention to it. And something weird's happening overall, and it's a really weird phenomena.
So let's continue with these questions. Thomas, thanks for sharing all that with us. Really, you know, I know it's hard. There's a lot of scary stuff, especially, you know, having a family and everything. I know it's hard that, I don't know, at least for me as well. Anyway, moving on. So next one. Oh, this is great. And I guess we did kind of touch on it, but I got to read this because it's from a guy named Mr. Physics on Twitter. And he asks us, did the cattle witness the first rocket launch? Could that have spooked them? How did their time of strange activity correlate to the human activities with the rockets? I know we touched on it. And there's a lot we can't get into, but yeah, you know what? Never mind. I think we beat that one to death.
The baseline was established. They were definitely acting out of the ordinary.
Yep.
And it was not related to rockets.
Okay. Now, we have the, I'm trying to find another one that we haven't covered here. Oh, here's a great one, Thomas. This is from Unknown. But the question came in, again, this is, I think it's still from Twitter. They ask, how does your faith impact how you view and respond to the strangeness?
Wow. I think of everything that's taken place, my injury, the things I've witnessed out on the ranch. I've always been very, very religious my whole life. And the ranch has challenged just about every aspect of my belief system. And I'm just going to say that that's probably been the biggest challenge for me, being associated with the ranch, is trying to reconcile the belief system that I held before with the things that I see now. And I will say that I feel like I've gained a lot of great answers. It's made me grow, but out of everything associated with the ranch, that's definitely been probably the biggest challenge that I have had to face, is trying to reconcile my religious views and my spiritual views with some of the things that I've witnessed.
I don't know what other, you know, people have said about that in the past, if it changes people that way, religiously. I mean, I know that you a lot of you guys are very religious, and it's you know, when I first went out there, that was kind of one of the things that was just like going off in my head. Like, here are people that are, you know, they're God-fearing people. Like, they practice, they're religious. And this is happening. They have nothing to gain by saying this stuff, and nothing, like, there's no reason for people to make any of this stuff up. And it's kind of, that's the first step when you, like, investigating something like this. Like, are people, you know, as a television producer, like, is this nonsense or is it real? And you kind of identify the people, and you're talking to people and interviewing people, you determine what is and isn't, you know, real. Like, your bullshit, you have a bullshit detector, and either it goes off or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then you can continue taking steps and steps and steps, and then meeting you guys and finally getting to know you and understanding, like, yeah, this is the most genuine, these are the most genuine people I've ever, you know, had the pleasure of dealing with. And, you know, here we are, and it's like everyone else is getting to see it now too. And again, I appreciate you guys sharing all this with us. I mean, I don't know what, Jason, Maureen, please chime in. Like, what are your experiences with people? Like, you know, you guys interview a lot of people, you talk to a lot of people. Like, how does their faith impact a lot of their, the beliefs in their interactions with people?
Yeah, it's a pretty normal response for anybody who experiences something that they really can't explain, something that is out of the ordinary for them, and something that, frankly, you know, basically shatters what they held as reality. You have these life-changing experiences that you can't explain. It really changes your worldview, the reality you thought you lived in. You know, you thought you had these answers and you know, this defined reality, explained by belief systems in many cases, and then things happen that are outside of that. It, a lot of people can't handle it, and it's sort of, especially in the UFO world, you know, it's not uncommon for people to just completely abandon their faith based on the experiences they've had. But, you know, then on the other side, religion is a very big topic in the UFO world, and there are plenty of people who have done extensive studies on religions and religions around the world, and, you know, how people would react, you know, if they were face-to-face with extraterrestrials, if we were confirmed that they're intelligent extraterrestrials. You know, so this is a topic that is touched on a lot. There's some great books out there, some great studies that have been done. But by and large, it's a normal thing in this field, and it's understandable because, again, when the world you thought, or the universe, the reality you thought you knew existed, all of a sudden doesn't exist anymore, you have to reevaluate things, and it affects people in different ways. It's individual. It's very individualized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, adding to Jason's point, like you mentioned, it's a huge question, and it's one we commonly get is what would happen to world's religions if we discovered intelligent extraterrestrial life was out there. But even the Vatican has their own space observatory where they actively search for extraterrestrial life. So, you know, on the one hand, I feel like a mindset and a religion, like you said, it's per person, so it's individualized. But I could see, I'm not specific, I was raised Catholic, but I'm not really religious now, but I could see that somehow other species, extraterrestrial life could be encapsulated into people's religious beliefs. It would just take time for them to figure out, you know, the way behind it a little bit, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I feel like this is a topic we could go on for hours. So moving on, you know, I feel like we've gotten a little serious here. And let's go to the last question we have from Twitter, which is great, is I find this funny because I didn't really know exactly a lot about these things. But the question, we don't know who it's from. Again, it says, do you know of any experiments using mind expanding techniques like ayahuasca or DMT on the ranch, Thomas?
No.
And scene. That's great.
I know that they've been talked about, but no. Right.
Yes. And I'm sure there's plenty of accounts you can find of people online. The unknown person who sent that Twitter question, I'm sure if you Googled those phrases, you know, Skinwalker Ranch and ayahuasca DMT, you'll find some, you know, some people have their accounts of it. You get a lot of people coming out there. I know, Thomas, since you got a lot of the new, a lot of the equipment went up, you get a lot of visitors coming around, you know, like looky-loos.
Yep.
How's that been? Is it still going on right now? Has it increased since the show?
Oh, dramatically. Yep. Yeah, Dragon's got his hands full.
Well, I know you get your hands dirty too. I've seen you kind of well, jump in.
You know what? That's the thing about, I've seen people criticize some of us for the emotion or the drama. And what they don't realize is that the History Channel, Prometheus was invited guests to come in on an investigation that was already taking place. And Brandon assembled, we joke, you know, this hodgepodge of individuals, different backgrounds, but all of us are very good at whatever it is that we specialize in, and we complement each other well. And we're like a family. And so, I pitch in and help on security on a regular basis. And likewise, I mean, just this past week, Dragon came out and helped me. We were moving a few cameras and different things around and installing some new poles and stuff. And he spent the whole day with me installing cameras and running wire and doing that kind of stuff. So we all pitch in and just help where it's needed. And we just all help each other.
Nice. You know, that's the glamour of television that no one knows. Like, yeah, they make it look so pretty on TV, but there's a lot of work that goes into this. And you guys are still busting your ass out there. I mean, it is your job. I mean, this is what you do. So, you know, the glamour of TV is when you're standing in 2 feet of mud holding a bounce card in a jungle somewhere, like, wow, I'm so happy I'm working in television. You know, when you're knee deep in cement, pouring cement, or putting up holes, it's like, yeah, awesome TV.
Well, I'm so happy that you're having Eric on next week because the science has been ongoing since Brandon bought it in one form or another. And just because the cameras pack up and go home from the network doesn't mean the science stops. We continue, right. And Eric will probably tell you it was very challenging to try and incorporate having people there. It posed a whole new set of challenges having film crew on site. Because you had to accommodate that as well. And so I'll say that we probably get more done and are able to do better science and more science when the cameras aren't there than they are. But, you know what, I think it's very, very important. And Brandon felt the same way. And I remember having lots of discussions once we determined that there was something going on at the ranch. Then the discussion turned and it was like, you know, Bigelow had his philosophy on the data, and that was to keep it very confidential. We don't know what he did or did not have. But once we established that we are seeing something unique here at the ranch, then it becomes, well, what do we do with it? Do we hang on to it to ourselves? Do we keep it quiet? Do we release it to the public? And I love Brandon because he's so collaborative. And he feels like the more set of eyes you put on a problem, the quicker you're going to find an answer. And he's very transparent and open. And so then it, you know, it's like, well, all right, so we want to share this and see what we're seeing. And if you told me the discussion of a TV show never even came up when at the beginning, like if you told me 2 years, 3 years ago, I remember when you first pitched. Yeah, I mean, you were really the start of it, TJ, because I remember you reached out to me on Messenger, and then it evolved into a phone call, and you pitched it. And I remember kind of rolling my eyes thinking, that's absolutely stupid.
Yes.
No way we're going to do a TV show on this. And so that was never our ambition. So anyway, it's been a journey.
This is a great way to kind of cap it off. And, you know, teasing into Eric, I mean, Eric's going to come out next week and we're going to have a lot more questions for him. Thomas, you know, thanks, man, for spending time with us, you know, sharing your stories. This is awesome. I know people are going to have some more questions for you, I'm sure. So we got to have you back later date again.
Okay. No, like, I enjoy it. The editors have quite a job cut out for them trying to keep it scientifically sound without making it so boring that we all fall asleep at night watching it. And so there's sometimes when I see things going and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'd love to be able to expound on that because there's so much more to the story.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We'll get to it. Hopefully this goes on for a while. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys, so, you know, in next week, like we were just saying, next week, even though the show's not on, we'll have Eric Bard on and we'll take as many questions as we can get in, keep them as long as we can. You know, we'll work them really hard and we'll make it two episodes out of it so that we'll be able to bridge that gap of the week off. And then we'll come back with episode 5, which is Thomas's favorite episode, which I love. That sounds great.
The data.
Nice.
I don't know about the episode like being the most entertaining, although I think it is. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, the data.
Okay, so there, for the record, yes. So episode 5, season 1, episode 5, Dangerous Curves, and it is on May 5, Cinco de Mayo. So that's awesome. And it's the day after Maureen's birthday, May 4th, right?
Yep.
May the 4th be with you. Is that what it is?
Yes, Star Wars Day.
Nice, Star Wars Day. That'll be awesome. So, but again, thanks, Thomas. And so please, if you want to reach us, send us questions and stuff. Jason always has it off the top of his head. I know he's – Jason, where's the best places to reach us?
Yeah, for sure. Email. We always love getting email. So it's contact@rogueplanet.tv. That is our email address. Send us questions based on the previous episode or anything strange. That's where you can reach us about anything, but definitely send your questions there. And Twitter. Twitter's a great way to send us questions. We're at Skinwalker Pod on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, again, thanks, Thomas. And I guess we will wrap it up there. Please join us next week and the following week. And don't forget, the Secret Skinwalker Ranch airs on History, 10 o'clock on Tuesdays, starting again on May 5th. So thank you all for spending time with us. Take care.